Are you ready, kids? Get your parents' permission, check your mailbox, and grab your shopping cart. It's time for the Adventures in Collecting podcast.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Dave.
Welcome to Adventures in collecting,
where we talk toy news, culture, and hauls,
along with our journeys as collectors.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Adventures in Collecting.
Hi.
Dave.
Eric.
This episode is more than meets the eye.
You could say that.
And the lead is currently not going to be in disguise.
No, it's not.
Because I'm not going to bury
it. Can you disguise a lead?
I don't know. I know you could bury one. But okay. We should really...
We do not do that.
No. But we should really roll out and just announce today's guests. I just have one question for you, Dave. Do you have the touch?
I've got the power.
Perfect. Nailed it. I was hoping we were going to get like a Mark Wahlberg, Dirk Diggler sort of impersonation, but it's kind of late. That's a lot on the pipes, you know.
It's allergy season.
It would have been perfect, though. You would have nailed it. Well, if you haven't picked up on it already, and you didn't read the title of the episode, and you didn't look at the tile art, and you're just coming in completely in the dark.
Or didn't see Instagram.
None of that. This is your brand. First of all, if you're brand new here, hi. Welcome. Yes, today we are joined by a new guest on the pod. We have had other members of this absolutely talented, awesome team on the show before, but we are finally adding today's guest to the list. We are welcoming Ben B-Mac McCray, marketing on the Hasbro Transformers team. Ben B-Mac, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. This is going to be a lot of fun. Very excited to join the prestigious world of what my other teammates have already had the chance to do.
Yeah, I mean, we're just collecting Hasbro folks. Eventually, we're going to get you all.
We're like Pokemon now. You got to collect us all, see if you can evolve us up.
Pretty much. Yeah. So before we kind of dive into your history with toys and, you know, and kind of how you wound up at Hasbro and everything, as this is a show about collecting, the first thing we ask all of our guests, what are you currently collecting and what are some of your recent pickups?
Yeah. For me, I'm sure this isn't going to be a shock for anybody that's paid attention to our streams or seen me crash a G.I. Joe fan stream here or there. G.I. Joe is my ultimate true love. No disrespect to Transformers by any means, but I was actually a toy tester for G.I. Joe at Hasbro as a kid. So I've just kind of always been in love. It was something that my dad passed on to me. He was watching G.I. Joe and buying the comics before I was even born. So by the time I could pick up a comic, like I had the first 4.5 years worth of G.I. Joe books or Marvel to read. And that show was just on every afternoon. So Classified definitely have at least one, but more likely three of every character that's come out since that line launched. So that's my current go-to. I also collect some of the X-Men stuff. I was a huge Age of Apocalypse kid, loved Joe Madureira. And that whole arc of comics just hit perfectly in that era of my life. So as soon as that first wave came out, which I think actually launched before I was at Hasbro, I ordered that whole wave. And then the second wave came, and then it still didn't include Mr. Sinister. So I got to go after Dan and Ryan and be like, I know there's another wave. Why would you do that to me? So I've been really digging a lot of the classic X-Men stuff that's been coming out as of late as well.
So there's a lot to unpack here.
So before
we get into the, you know what, let's just go right into the toy tester thing. So please tell us more about that.
So we had a family friend who worked in the factory when the offices that we're in now were actually still one of the factories, and they never had any kids. So he was able to like adopt me per se as his toy tester family member. And he just was able to get me on G.I. Joe. So I have some stuff in my basement, like wrong color prototypes, stuff that never actually ended up coming out. Just a lot of late 80s, early 90s stuff. I think it's the Battle America tank is what it's called. It's like the one that looks like a tank, but flips down and is the brick walls that they can all stand on, which makes no sense for a vehicle, but it was so 90s that it hurt. I think I tested like 100 different rubber bands to try to make that center platform work. And like, I never got a working one, but they did finally get one when the toy came out. So like mine doesn't actually stay down anymore. I tested the new HQ that came out at that point. Yeah, it was just a lot of fun. Like I just got lucky in that I got to do that. I did test some like Nerf sport things and a couple other things along the way, but like 98% of everything I got to play with was Joe. And because the internet and cell phones and stuff didn't exist back then, you actually got to keep the toys when you tested them. So I actually still have them now. Like I'm like now where you come in, it's IP secure and all that. So it was really cool. And I never understood why my dad hated it, because he also had to fill out like this survey, like how was it to build, how we're putting on the decals. And I was just like, I get to play with cool toys. This is great for me. So it was kind of one of those funny processes that I never, you know, had to really play with. Like he had to do the hard work and I got to have the fun. So
that's amazing. Do you remember like, you know, having friends over or anything to play with them too, where they were like, whoa, this is the best.
Yeah, some of it, mainly family that were like trying to like, oh, I'm going to borrow this. And I'm like, no, you're going to put that back like right now. It's mine. You're not taking it out of here. To this day, the sad, like I got to test that HQ and one of my cousins actually broke off one of the gun turrets, and like the molded plastic for the bottom of the turret is different on the full line production run. So like it's complete but incomplete because that one piece is broken, and it like kills me to this day. It's awesome to have, but at the same time, I'm just like, man, it's not 100% complete. So.
Man, that's awesome. That is really,
yeah,
really cool.
That's so cool.
And then the other thing you mentioned, you know, that obviously, you know, the G.I. Joe is your love and everything. Must have been pretty cool to be part of the crossover stuff then, getting to bring Transformers into the G.I. Joe world.
Yeah, it was awesome. When I joined the product team, which I'm sure we'll get into, like my whole journey, that was one of the projects that just like all of a sudden I see and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm going to manage this. Like this, I'm taking this project. It's mine. Like I have it. Don't worry about it. It'll be cool. And I was like, yep, Megatron, his tank. This makes total sense. Saw that we were doing Awestriker Bumblebee that was coming a little later. I'm like, that's really cool. I'm like, okay, so for next year, here's what we have to do. And I was just like super stoked. Like, this is what it's going to be. So like, I haven't been shy about the fact that there will be more of these crossovers. So one is coming. You might be able to guess like when it might get announced, because we kind of have a cadence now for it. So it's this year's is going to be really awesome. I'm super stoked. When I decided to pursue it, Mark's like, I have a whole deck on that. I thought about that like 3 years ago. Here's what it should look like. And it was just, it instantly came together. So it was fun.
Yeah. I can't imagine the conversation between you, Mark, and Lenny as you're trying to like,
yeah,
you know, combine the, it's just, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. Very, we nerd out a lot. So.
So, how did you find your way to Hasbro and the Transformers team?
Yeah, my story is kind of interesting in that regard, in that let me give you a little backstory. So I used to help run Magic the Gathering events all over the world for a contractor. We got that contract officially at the end of 2017. I worked for them full time through 2018, and then they did some restructuring, and I was kind of one of the only East Coast people, and it just made more sense for them to keep their West Coast team, so I got laid off. And then I was kind of having issues finding work, so I decided it was time to go back to school and pursue my bachelor's, because I had had my associates since like 2004, getting out of high school and going right to college. So I went back to school, and in the process of pursuing that, an internship on the franchise side of the Transformers team got posted, and I was like, I'm in school. Says I just have to be an active student. Let's apply to this. So I did. Got interviewed. It was very like just, you know, fortunate in that they were looking for somebody that wasn't very green. They needed somebody that could come in and like hit the ground running. So I had a lot of experience from owning my previous merch companies and doing that event stuff and just like being working with franchises. So that was my start. Got in as an intern in the fall of 2020. Yeah. And worked on the franchise team, and then got extended for a second internship right around Christmas time. And then about March of 2021, Rachel, for those of you who remember her from some of our fan streams and PulseCon, she was having her first kid, and so she was going out for maternity leave, and basically the product team stole me from the franchise team and put me in charge of product, of which I had never worked on before, and that was 2.5 years ago now. So like, I've been here ever since, clearly moved around and start to work on a lot of different things. So that's my journey of how I got in and where I'm at now.
That's awesome. And I mean, you've kind of alluded to the fact that you know, you were very ingrained in like the Hasbro fandom when you were a kid, but that was on the G.I. Joe end. Were you big into Transformers when you were a kid too, or did kind of the role suck you into the fandom?
I was a Transformers kid, not anywhere near what I was for G.I. Joe by any means. I had watched G1. The first DVD I ever bought, I actually tried to go buy the G.I. Joe movie and it was sold out, so I bought Transformers the movie. I did get my G.I. Joe DVD like a couple of weeks later, but I mean, that intro. How can you not like the intro to the G.I. Joe movie, right?
So I just took this past summer, I took my 7-year-old to go see it when they showed it in theaters.
Perfect. Such we all experience. Went. It was hilarious. Like the whole Joe team, a bunch of us in the Transformer team, we all got to go too. It's funny to watch that now in theaters with everybody because you never got to. So Transformers, I was into it. When Beast Wars came out, it actually kind of hit perfectly. It was on every morning on my local TV channel while I'd eat breakfast before school. So I watched a lot of that show. So it was kind of interesting in that I joined the Transformer team in the 25th anniversary of Beast Wars and Kingdom was coming.
Wow. Yeah.
So it was just kind of like, oh yeah, I really know this show. So it worked out well. I kind of dropped off a little, like when I got to college, didn't really watch like Armada or Energon or Cybertron or any of that. And then Prime came out when the Hub Network, and they were also relaunching Joe. So like I had got clued into to the Hub Network, loved Prime, was absolutely in love with that show. Watched all of the Prime Wars trilogy, and then clearly was, you know, into the War for Cybertron stuff and had been watching it before I applied, and then, you know, got to see Earthrise and Kingdom come out while I was there.
Yeah, Prime is still like those designs are so sharp. They're almost they're almost like take a page out of Evangelion, like the like kind of like stretched, like warped. Everybody's tall and angular, and
the show was so unique. It was well like ahead of its time. And as I've been here, learned that it was expensive to animate, and as you would expect. So
makes sense.
Yeah, I was also like into comics a lot. My dad was a huge comic collector, so when Devil's Due. Was a Dreamwave, one of the two, whenever they got the Transformers license after Marvel and Pat Lee was doing the artwork, I was just like, happened to be in a comic shop and I'm like, this cover is awesome. I need this. And so like, I have the Decepticon and the Autobot number ones. And so I've always just kind of been like in and out of the fandom for Transformers, you know, I have no Evan or Mark by any means. Those guys pull stuff out of everywhere. And I'm just like, how do you know this? So
yeah, having Mark being our first I guess Lenny was technically on before Mark, but he was already transitioning from Transformers to G.I. Joe, like we knew that was happening. But when we had Mark on, it was such a fun interview, but it was also a challenge for us as like people who are, I full disclosure, like we are green when it comes to Transformers. Mm-hmm. Like our knowledge doesn't go very, very deep. So when we had him on, it was almost like we were sitting there like, tell us more.
He pulls out stuff all the time. He's like, we should do this character. I've been dying to get this out. And I'm like, who are you talking about? Like, if it wasn't for TF Wiki, man, there's times where I would just be completely lost. Like, I go there at least 10 times a day when we start brainstorming for the next year. Or we're working on an exclusive capsule. And I'm just like, who's this? What did you pull out? Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Let's do that. Oh, what's this character? Oh, okay. Yep. Mm-hmm, that's cool. Those colors work. Let's look at that. They're absolutely talented and incredible. And this brand can give all of its success on fan products like Generations for Studio Series and that to those two, and Sam Smith, who was on our team for a while, and Lenny too. Like clearly Lenny had a lot to do with Transformers before moving to G.I. Joe.
So you, speaking of Evan, you and Evan just wrapped up on the latest Hasbro Pulse fan stream where a new RoboSend Optimus Prime was introduced. Tell us about this Elite Optimus Prime.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It's very close to the flagship that came out, but now that the flagship is out of stock and unattainable, Robeson and Pulse wanted to get back together and bring out another item because there was more demand from people that wanted their own auto-converting Optimus Prime, which is an awesome thing to play with. So the Elite's a little smaller, but it still has a lot of the same like motor. I think it has the same number of motors, the same number of servos, all of that stuff. So it's just a little more compact. The big thing that I got from this and like from talking with 6-0 prior to the fan stream and like just getting a little bit of background on it from Robeson is that this one's a little more interactive with the app than the flagship was. Like there's some challenges and you unlock extra moves and you can also do your own like building stuff with this in like terms of making some new robotics abilities with him. So it's a little more interactive and playful than the flagship was initially. Like there's stuff now that people have figured out how to do with the flagship. But again, like if you feel like you missed out and you don't want to spend that much money trying to find one, you now have a chance to go pre-order that Elite. You're going to get it. It's awesome. It's a very cool toy. Robeson is really cool. I like everything they do. I spent 40 hours listening to Peter Cullen lines when I was on the franchise side of the business, cataloging them because they had been recorded, but nobody had ever transcribed them. He wished me very many happy birthdays and very different inflections because we part of those audio files were also when we had greeting cards for Optimus Prime. So I put a lot of love, like a legit whole week. All I did, like ignored emails, ignored meetings, was listen to 40 hours of Peter Cullen lines.
It's like that when you guys partnered with Calm, I think the app was, the Peter Cullen, you know, tells you a bedtime story. His voice, just those
dotted so
tones of Peter Cullen.
He's a super nice person too. And if you ever have the chance to talk to Frank Welker, very mind blowing in the fact that his natural voice sounds like Fred from Scooby-Doo of who he is the voice of. Mm-hmm. And it just like, it's very like weird to like, you're like, oh, I'm having a conversation, but I really feel like you need a white shirt and an ascot right now so we can talk properly. Like, but he's one of the nicest people in the industry. Like we super lucked out in who we've had make our show historic throughout the 40 years of the brand, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, just getting back to the Robeson, you know, Optimus, it's just one of those things where like, I can't believe how far toys have come. Like I'm sitting here with, you know, an Optimus Prime from just, you know, a few years ago. And the idea that there's one that's, you know, just a few inches taller than this and you can talk to it and he does push-ups and plays air guitar and drums. And it's just like, I can't believe we've gotten here. It's unbelievable.
It's kind of what you hoped they would do when you were younger. Now, kind of evolved to, no, this is what they do.
And like he breathes, like him just sitting there, like, has that like gentle, like you could see his chest moving.
It's so well done. Robeson's been a great partner. Excited for everything that they've done. Looking forward to, you know, what else is potentially possible as time continues.
Yep. Yeah, speaking of Frank Welker, hopefully you have 40 plus hours of Frank Welker in your not too distant future.
Sadly, I don't think it's going to turn into the Walter PPK. You know, that's just going to not probably work out for anyone. So,
No. But I think everyone's used to just a tank with a really big, you know, a really big,
big old fusion cannon.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Transformers Rise of the Beasts is edging closer to that June 9th release date, and it's finally going to see the Maximals and Predacons enter the film universe. Has it been exciting for you to have the opportunity to support the release of this new film?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I'm glad I can finally talk about Unicron. I've known about that being in the movie for 3 years now, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. And it was one of those things that like we weren't sure they were actually going to show in a trailer prior to the movie, so it was like the biggest kept secret in the industry about the film. So that's really awesome. I'm glad to see everybody's excitement for that. I can't wait to see it. I actually haven't seen much outside of like a couple things basically outside the trailer. There are people within the company that have seen it. They saw a rough cut last summer before animation was done, and they've seen a few different cuts since then as they're like working the last little bits of tweaks, as movies tend to do, you know, up to release time. That last 2 weeks prior, they're still making some final tweaks and animation fixes. From the product side, it's been interesting in that we actually have movie product in studio series in the movie year. That had a lot to do with the movie shifting out a year. When we made our plan is that we were supposed to be following it because we'd really try to go for that screen accuracy, final CAD from the film, make the toy. So we tried our best. I'm sure there are a couple people who, once they see the movie, be like, well, that's not 100% accurate. That's what Studio Series is supposed to be about. Well, we tried our best. We updated the toys up until the absolute last minute that we could for production. But it's been nice to have stuff. I really think that they're also going to take off, like, once everybody gets a chance to go see the movie and connect with characters. Once they see the film and be like, oh yeah, Rhinox is totally my dude. Or, oh, Primal just absolutely slayed this movie. I need an Optimus Primal. Where's my Optimus Primal? Or, oh, I'm in love with RC now because she's just funny. And, like, Eliza Koshy is a great actress. And I actually have to go get that core class Ducati because it's just awesome. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun to create that stuff. Our kid team actually got to create a lot of really awesome product for the film too. So more to come from Studio Series. I won't be shy about it. We have some more to reveal this year and even some other characters into 2024, just how things worked out. So don't feel like we're going to stop supporting this movie by any means as soon as it hits theaters. We still have more for everybody this year.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, and I mean, that's one of those things that always comes up too, right? Where it's like, you know, especially with Hasbro and the relationship, you know, Hasbro has with Disney and the, you know, and, you know, kind of these filmverse things, is there's always like that certain amount of stuff that you can put out before the film or like while the film's out. And then there's always, you know, the big reveal, the twist, the things that happen.
Oh, I hope this comes. Yeah.
That. Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
So definitely excited to see where you guys go with that, because we're seeing all the stuff start to hit shelves and like the pairings of the characters. It's like, oh, how do these interact in the movie?
So what's been different for you between production of the movie based bots and then the Evolution line?
Like I was saying, Studio Series, we try to be as screen accurate as we can. So when it's licensed, like, I'm trying to think here, what was licensed for this film, per se. So clearly, like, Bumblebee is licensed with GM. Other characters in the film that are licensed would be, like, a Nightbird is the Nissan. The Battletrap is a licensed GM tow truck. So we have a lot of licensor beholding to make sure the characters and the vehicles look really accurate to their vehicle form too. Sam absolutely crushes that. He is very much a car guy. And without him, sometimes like he just has this attention to detail that even like Takara, when given CAD from the company, will be like, we're just going to cut this corner. He's like, no, this line needs to be here because of X, Y, and Z. It's been on the car since 1993. And you're just like, I don't know how you know this. So there's a little more constriction per se for live action stuff on Studio Series. We have a little more freedom in terms of what we're doing with our 86 line and then now expanding into War for Cybertron. Again, trying to be as 100% screen accurate as we can be. Evan spends a lot of time watching the 86 movie with his Pantone book and making sure he's nailing the colors since it's been color corrected. So those toys really come out as close as you can. And then for the War for Cybertron stuff, we actually got like the original CAD files for the characters from our digital games team from the discs back in the day. And they tried to make those like as accurate as they could. Clearly transformation engineering a little different from what it was able to do in a video game, but, really just a lot of fun there. In terms of Evolution, we have a lot of freedom. It's a lot of fun, and we get to just kind of do what we're trying to do. It started out, like, I know in year one of Legacy, like, there was a lot of interesting comments, we'll say, about Bulkhead or RC coming from Prime Universe, but then being G1ified, and maybe it took it quite a little too far. And I think we've kind of like found that good medium line where we're making a cohesive look and scale of how everybody looks in Transformers Legacy over the years. And kind of found that good blend of like paying homage to the universe they come from, but bringing them into this one cohesive Generations line. So we get a lot of freedom, and that's where, you know, Mark and Evan get to shine. Like Tarn this year, absolutely incredible. Like people have been asking for, I don't know, 5-6 years, like, when are we getting an official Transformers Generations Tarn figure? And we're like, okay, let's do it. Like, this is the line to do it in, so let's just get it done.
Yeah, and clearly Mark's had the freedom to come up with like legitimate new characters with like those Junkions that have been coming out, and you know, there's another one, Trashmaster.
Yeah. Yep, that'll get revealed soon. Yeah, we've kind of had this custom build system in Generations for a little while now. It started with the Weaponizers in War for Cybertron, and then they did the Fossilizers in Kingdom. And then we got to have, you know, the Junkions this year, which is a ton of fun. And Yeah, so tons of crazy creations. I've seen people make, like, somebody was able to make a predator out of the weaponizers and the fossilizers, so I can't wait to see what they're able to do by adding these Junkion pieces. But one of the biggest pieces of feedback we get is, like, creating new characters, because it's been so long that, like, everybody knows the history, and, like, they love their Optimus and their Bumblebee, but they definitely want something new. So being able to give them new characters from an existing faction that they know, or maybe creating a new faction like we did with the fossilizers, it just made sense. Like, fossil play is huge. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun to just kind of have that freedom with Legacy, and then now with Evolution. And it's just a lot of fun to just make stuff that people were like, I'm never going to get this toy recreated. And then all of a sudden we're like, hey, we're recreating this toy, and they lose their mind, and it sells out in the first 20 minutes when it hits Pulse. You know, it's great.
Yeah, and kind of going back to the studio series for a second, you know, I'm not shy about saying the fact that the Michael Bay franchise is what got me into Transformers, and I'm by no means like a car expert, but I think one of the things that was so attractive about that movie to me was seeing, like, oh, like, look at in kind of like in real life, like, look at where the windshield goes, and like, see, like, looking mm-hmm. at like the transformation process. And then for me, the icing on the cake was we went to Universal Studios and went on the attraction, and seeing Optimus, you know, transform, you know, feet away from you, you know, in the ride in 3D was just like completely blew my mind. And I mean, that's what sucked me in. And like the attention to detail on the studio series line, I mean, like it matters. Like it those little tiny things.
Yeah, and it was different too from, like, you know, the cartoon, you hear the noise and they transform and, you know, it happens, but it's to see it like kind of quickly flow into movement in the movies was just kind of the mind blowing kind of jaw dropping part of it. Oh, yeah. And that's what I always enjoyed most about those movies is the, just seeing the Transformers, seeing the bots do what they do.
Yeah, there's no denying that, like, in 2007, that movie just hit well, right? Like, it rejuvenated the franchise. It brought people back to Transformers that maybe had walked away from their childhood. It created a new generation of kids who had never heard or seen a Transformer. Then all of a sudden they see this commercial and they're like, Dad, I want to go to the theater and see the truck do the thing. You know, so it was like, we owe a lot to those films in terms of like our longevity of our brand and it always being on for the last 40 years. And it is like studio series is all about that detail. And our team absolutely nails it every chance they get. Takara does their best to try to make those transformations look as close to screen as they can. Like, clearly you can do a lot more with CGI than we can do with physical plastic in your hand. But, studio series definitely is a different beast, and it's actually like a great introduction for a lot of people. So you're not the only one. We do see a lot of people join the Transformers toy collecting world through studio series because they saw X movie and they're like, oh, this is that character. So, like, you know, The Fallen just came out last year and people are like, I've been waiting for The Fallen, you know, since 2009. Where's my Fallen? Mm-hmm. And now they're just like back in again. They're like, oh, this just came back out. I love this villain. And they're like, oh, wait, there's 100 more of these things. Oh, gotta go buy more. So, studio series and just the films in general have been great for the brand.
Well, I mean, I could tell you that every time we see a yellow and black Camaro anywhere, like my daughter is like, oh, it's Bumblebee. Like, yep. Very good. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not a Camaro, it's like a Corvette or something, or, you know, some other kind of, you know, low flat sports car, but it's that same color scheme. She's like, is that Bumblebee? I'm like, that's not a Camaro, but like, you're still, it could be. You're adorable.
Is it still a Chevy? Maybe he decided to change today. You never know.
Yeah, he scanned a different car. It's fine. It's fine. But it is awesome to see, you know, the studio series characters come off the screen and into the line. But something else that was revealed, you know, during your most recent live stream were two very interesting Amazon exclusive sets that include some pretty deep cuts, including characters like Data Clerk Orion Pax and Senator Ratbat. So how do, you know, characters like that are such deep cuts, how do they find their way into the line?
Yeah, that one is actually all Evan. He had this whole plan that he presented when we were trying to figure out our 2023 line. And he was like, hey, Amazon gives us what we call, it's called A+ content. So Amazon, with their product pages, they have a lot of extra space so that we can provide extra e-com copy and tell a little bit of a story. So using a story that existed loosely through all the different iterations of the pre-war comics and putting these characters together, we were like, okay, we can tell a story of this pre-war Senate versus a Decepticon era before the Autobots and Decepticons were a thing. Everybody knows Optimus as Optimus Prime, but there was a time where he basically was just like he was a data clerk, right? He was working in the library in Iacon City, and he was beholden to the Senate, and they would use him to do different things. It was fun to talk about Ratbat not being a tiny cassette that lives in Soundwave's chest, because you're like, well, okay, so he's this big giant senator, but then he just decides to later in life transcan into a cassette and live in somebody else's chest. It's like kind of funny. And then like Senator Shockwave also being like, wait, Shockwave wasn't always purple, wasn't always a Cyclops, and wasn't always just like completely insane and just wanted to kill everything and everyone. Huh? Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about that. And then we've always wanted to make a minor Megatron for a while. You know, clearly an important part of his history, especially if you've read that miniseries that came out about Megatron. So these packs were great. And then clearly we weren't shy about it on the fan stream that there's more coming to this story capsule, so that you'll be able to build out a little more, and maybe even some more deep cuts that I don't think people are expecting, but really unique characters that we wanted to, again, use that storytelling platform of Amazon to really drive home, kind of like we did with the Wreckers last year, where you actually got that story that built on itself each day when it came out, so you knew what we were doing. Or 2 years ago with the Golden Disc, when you were like, wait, we're doing time travel about this disc all of a sudden in this same capsule where we're already doing time travel in the mainline. What is going on here? So really awesome ability and great partnership with Amazon to be able to bring fans something they never thought they'd be able to get in a very easy to get exclusive process, thanks to Amazon. So,
and now a word from our sponsors.
This segment is brought to you by our friends at Chubsy Wubsy Toys. A traditional mom-and-pop toy store in Little Falls, New Jersey, Chubsy Wubsy Toys brings you the best new toys from the brands you love without the hassle of pounding the pavement searching for them at larger retail stores. Visit them in person at their brand new home at 101 Newark Pompton Turnpike Suite 1 in Little Falls, New Jersey for their grand opening on Saturday, May 13th. Or online at chubzywubzy.com. That's chubzywubzy.com. And tell them Adventures in Collecting sent you.
Rewind and press play on your VHS collection with CGC. CGC is excited to announce our newest collectible vertical, CGC Home Video. As a division dedicated to authenticating and grading your VHS collection, our experts are ready to help you encapsulate your favorite video cassettes. Don't settle for static on the screen. Submit today at cgcgrading.com. That's cgcgrading.com.
Face it, shaker bottles suck. Your shakes always come out clumpy and they're a pain to clean.
You're right, Dave. That's why I decided to ditch my shaker bottle for good and get myself a BlendJet 2 portable blender. It makes perfectly blended shakes in just 20 seconds.
BlendJet 2 is portable, so you can blend up a smoothie at work, a protein shake at the gym, or even a margarita on the beach. It's small enough to fit in a cup holder, but powerful enough to blast through tough ingredients like ice and frozen fruit with ease.
BlendJet 2 is whisper quiet, so you can make your morning smoothie without waking up the whole house. It lasts for over 15 blends and recharges quickly via USB-C.
Best of all, BlendJet 2 cleans itself. Just blend water with a drop of soap and you're good to go.
With an array of colors, patterns, or even Disney-inspired designs to choose from, show off your personality while you're blending up something delicious on the go.
What are you waiting for? Go to BlendJet.com and grab yours today.
And be sure to use the promo code AICPOD12 to get 12% off your order and free 2-day shipping. No other portable blender on the market comes close to the quality, power, and innovation of the BlendJet 2. They guarantee you'll love it or your money back. Blend anytime, anywhere with the BlendJet 2 portable blender. Go to blendjet.com and use the code AICPOD12 to get 12% off your order and free 2-day shipping. Shop today to get the best deal ever.
And now back to the show.
So with stuff like this, and these deeper cut characters, and the way that the two pack system works, it's like clearly there's like a hero character and then like a secondary character in the pack. But like with this process and the selection process, does a lot of it go into like, here are the available tools that we have, and what can we reuse, and kind of an economic view of how do we bring these characters to life, and how does that work?
That definitely is a big part of how exclusives work. We have a full tooling budget for the entire year for the brand. Clearly, we need to make newness all year, and that's what you really see across mainline in Studio Series and Legacy. And then we try to look at like where we can partial, where we Mark and Evan are great at this. They actually build like alt heads into a lot of the molds when they make the character the first time, knowing they're going to make X exclusive down the road. They're like, hey, I already seeded for this. Or they'll actually even put the extra pieces so that it's not actually a partial. It's just actually a straight up redeco. And we just turn off another part of the tool, or we have scrap that we just get rid of. They're really good about it. It actually, like, that's how Galaxy Shuttle came to be. We were looking for an exclusive, and Mark was looking through old tools and found that John Warden had hid the Galaxy Shuttle head in the Astrotrain mold back in Siege days. And he's like, we can make Galaxy Shuttle, which was perfect considering, like, we had just done Victory Saber, and we knew that Deathsaurus was coming even though the fans didn't. We're like, yeah, we should make Galaxy Shuttle. This is perfect. It's another,
amazing
that universe characters. So we do plan for that, but clearly tooling and finances do play a part in what we are able to do. It's not unlimited money, sadly. I would love to make everything as new as possible or everything be a partial, but clearly there are stuff where, like, I mean, it's how the line was built, though, right? Characters were literally built on just straight up redecoing other versions of those characters, so that's clearly where it comes from.
Yeah,
and I was going to say, I feel like reuse is the nature, and it's just kind of one of those things you almost have to think about in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the team's really good at that. They get it. Being toy collectors, they love their six versions of the same character in different deco. So they're like, if I make this and I can make these three different heads, this is what you get. It's really awesome. And they're really good at it. And then they just present it to me and I go, yep, that makes sense. Cool. Way to be economical. Make it. So it's great.
Now, we saw from another exclusive from Target, there was a shock drop for the Buzzworthy Bumblebee capsule. And that really kept the collector community on their toes. Is that a strategy that's going to continue into the foreseeable future?
Yeah, we are very strategic, I guess you would say, in terms of our exclusives. Part of the truth is that the way the line planned out with the movie shift, there wasn't a space for Optimus to exist within Studio Series. And as we allocate tooling and things here, we were actually able to just, like, we've seen good success with some Studio Series stuff at Target. So we knew we wanted to try something else out with that. And we were able to get Optimus, and we're like, yeah, we clearly need to have Optimus from Rise of the Beast somewhere. I know fans at certain points were just like, why would you make him an exclusive? It was just literally because of the movie shift, and it was just the way it worked. So I think it's fun. I think people are going to go. It's great that people will have a chance to, they'll go to the store and they'll hunt, which I think is something that's kind of lost a little bit now. Everybody's so used to their pre-order phase, but I think it'll be fun for them to go in, try to find these Optimus character and see like what else is on the shelf for Rise of the Beast in the movie after having seen it. And again, I know Evan kind of shared it on the stream, but like he started out as what was supposed to be a partial, but by the end, Takara Wizards work their magic as they tend to do, and pretty much almost all of that figure is brand new compared to the Bumblebee Optimus that it started with. So we got there. It's crazy. It's super fun. But it'll be a fun one to go hunt this summer when it drops.
Yeah, all of the vehicle modes and for the Rise of the Beast figures so far are like the Mad Maxification of them. Yeah. It's a cool it's a cool concept. I can't wait to see it play out the movie. So
yeah, I want us to buy one of the Optimists from the movie and just like park it at the office. I think it'd be super fun. I actually joke and say I want Scourge, and then I want to take it home because then I could get to the office real quick the next morning because everybody would just get the hell out of my way while I'm driving that down the interstate. Like, oh no, move, the thing's going to hit me. Yeah, you're right. I'm going to run you over because it's not going to hurt me. So,
well, listen, if the zombie apocalypse ever happens, we know where we're coming because
yeah,
that
Scourge,
yeah. Scourge will get through anything. Yeah. We get through anything. yeah, but you know, to your point, like it's been kind of cool, you know, going into Target and seeing unannounced stuff. Cause I mean, we grew up in that generation and like, yeah, we're mm-hmm. like, I'm not going to say
when everything was unannounced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that. Like, I don't love my pre-orders cause I love being able to just kind of sit at home, hit a button and just sit back and wait. Like, it's nice. It is nice. But yes. At the same time, you know, I'm going to Target for other reasons, you know, like I'm not just always going for toys, you know, from one father to another, you know, yep. Like those, oh crap, we're out of Desitin or, you know, yeah. You know, those little runs. And I'm always checking out the toy aisle. So it's always fun to see, you know, in the Transformers aisle stuff that like has not been shown on a stream and doesn't show up in Hasbro, you know, on the Instagram feed. And it's like, oh, you know, that buzzworthy, Bumblebee capsule is still paying off, you know, just like random new stuff showing up. So
yeah, it was super fun. I was actually on vacation over the weekend out in Santa Rosa, California, and had a Target run to go get a couple things. And I'm like, hey guys, while we're here, I got to go hit up the toy aisle, take some pictures just to compare it back to home. And it was actually like interesting to see, again, ran into some of the kid movie line buzzworthy Bumblebee exclusives like on the shelf. And I was like, that's cool. I haven't seen them yet. This is great. And like, got to take a picture and send it back to the team. I'm like, hey, I'm on vacation, but here's some pictures of the store Target in Santa Rosa. And like, look, they have exclusives on the shelf. They're working. It was nice to see. So yeah, it's a good program. I like what retailer exclusives do in terms of like driving people to the store to do what they're supposed to do, right? Like what Toys R Us exclusives always did back in the day. Yep. Same kind of concept, just like mm-hmm. helping our partners who help us continue to make this line successful and giving them things that drive consumers into their stores and incidental purchases on other things while they're already there, because the toy section's buried. So you have to walk by a lot of things and you're like, oh yeah, I need that. Oh yep, I forgot I needed that. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're getting another $100 in purchases and it works out for them and works out for us.
Yep. Yep. It's strategic. They know that those retailers, they know where, yep. they know why they put the toy aisle where they put it.
Yep.
It makes sense. All right, so our next section here is our Q&A. So as we always do when we have a guest on, we'll post on our Instagram. So Dave.
So make sure to smash that subscribe button and hit those likes. And
what about the follow button?
Like those, hit the follow button and answer that question for when we say, do you have a question?
Yes. Dave,
that's the only way you'll be able to participate in the Q&A and ask a question.
You get better at
checking
this.
Those stories.
You get better at doing this the way that you do this every episode, and I'm very proud of you. I love it.
I'm impressed. I mean, I always like forget at the end of the fan streams, and I'm like, oh yeah, like, subscribe, and share, and do the things on the YouTubes and the Instagram.
I forgot share. Share as well.
Yeah, you get there. Tell your friends. It takes a while. It took me 2 years. I promise you, it doesn't come naturally unless you're doing it, you know, every day for 5 hours a day.
So, you know, as Dave was saying, you know, if you're following us on Instagram at AIC_podcast, anytime we have a guest, we will post and collect, some questions to ask our guest. We know it is a, you know, we take it very seriously we understand that not everybody has access to the people that we have on the show, and we understand that privilege. So we want to make sure that we give you guys the opportunity to submit some questions as well. So all of that being said, Dave, would you like to handle our first question?
Yes. At Kubi Maximus?
I think that's right.
Hope I got that right. When can we... Oh, At Kubi Maximus asks, when can we get an update on the HasLab Deathosaurus?
There should be an update going out soon. I'm just waiting for the team to get it formatted and send it out. Evan recorded another video for anybody who backed Victory Saber and saw the EP1 video review. Evan has done the same thing for Deathosaurus for all of you wonderful backers, where he goes into all of little details, shows even some of the things that were messed up on the EP1, things that we're correcting as we work through that process. So that video should be going out pretty soon. He does do some comparison with Victory Saber in it, I believe. I've been so super busy that I actually haven't had a chance to watch it myself yet. So another semi-lengthy video, but Evan is really good at getting nitty and gritty and detailed with everybody there. And hopefully some more updates a little more consistently as we finished out the production cycle. The EP2 actually showed up at the office today. I decided to work from home because of my trip and I was being considerate to my team. Didn't want to potentially maybe get anybody sick. Not that I feel bad, but I was just like, let's just be safe. Went through two international airports. We'll be good. So I'm looking forward to seeing what changes and improvements they made over the first version that Evan reviewed, and then we will have some pictures of it. We will be taking it to Comic-Con with us, and potentially, hopefully, maybe we'll be ready to do an unboxing at Comic-Con like we did last year with Victory Saber.
Awesome. Nice. All right, so the next question comes from at The Nemesis Rises asks, how influential is the fandom to project design? Has there ever been a post, comment, or trend that has directly impacted a product decision?
Directly? I'm not sure. In terms of like comments and what people are asking for, like clearly, Tarn, definitely one of those people, characters that people had been asking for and were like, yep, we hear you, we're going to make it. Some fan vote stuff has happened, like Windblade was fan created, she finally got made. I know Lenny worked on that and had a lot of fun when that all went down. Who's going to be the next Prime was a vote, and they worked through all of that before I was on the team. So we do try, and we fail at it sometimes, and we're going to try to be better at it, of like engaging with the community and seeing what people really are asking for and wanting. I spend a lot of time, probably too much time, on forums and comment reading to see what people are saying about stuff when it comes out. I go back through and read the comments after the fan streams and see like what else everybody's kind of mining for. And we do take that all into consideration as we continue to develop the lines in the future. So directly impact, I don't know. Maybe there's design stuff that happens. Sometimes we see people kit bash characters that come out right when it comes out, and they're like, oh, this redeco is coming. And we're like, oh, we didn't think of it that way. Maybe that'll work. Influential. Yeah. The fans are definitely influencing where we're going and what we're doing, but clearly, you know, we have to make our Optimus and our Bumblebee every year, but we are expanding and, you know, making these fun characters, and it's because the fans have been asking for them repeatedly, and we're like, here, I have like 600 posts that say make Tarn, so we go and make that character, you know.
Nice.
So, you know, we always get those like, when is this coming amalgamation, and thank you for everyone that asks like when something's coming. What's the best way for the community, for the Transformers fans, to make their requests to the team heard?
Honestly, just keep commenting where you are. Like, you can comment to Mark or Evan or myself on our posts when we post on Instagram, post in the chat for the fan stream, post on the forums you're posting on. We're reading there. We are trying to, like, as a company overall, try to figure out how to engage with fans better. It's something we're working on with Pulse. And now that we have that platform to be like, hey, we should be talking back at the community, kind of like other big corporations do, you know, like Wendy's, for instance, one of my favorite Twitter accounts that they actually just get back at people. Clearly we're not going to be that kind of vulgar and mean to people, but engaging with people in that way. So there's definitely just, you know, where you're posting now, do that, but definitely hit us up on Instagram if you want to.
Dave, you want to do the next one?
Yeah, sure. At Jaden1047 asks, what was the first Transformer you ever worked on?
That's a good question. So I inherited the first year of Legacy when I joined the product team. The year was pretty much baked. So were all of the exclusives. I was kind of just managing it. So Evolution overall is kind of like my first foray into products I worked on. Did the brainstorms, work with the design team, figure out where we were going. Again, Studio Series for the most part was baked because it just shifted a year because of the movie. So War for Cybertron video game characters were something new that we decided to work on and add into 23. But I'm trying to think of like the first actual character that I kind of like took on and managed. It was actually probably those collabs. Like they had the G.I. Joe crossover ones. They had kind of started, but they weren't completely done yet. So those were the ones that I really like owned from the get-go. And then the biggest marketing things I had to take on were our Jurassic collab. And had to do all of the marketing for that. Like that project got dumped in my lap and they're like, we need a marketing plan. And how are we going to launch this? And we're going to do this and we need to do that. And I was like, okay, sure. Let's figure this out. So we were able to use an animator that we knew to make that teaser animation that we had go out the weekend before we launched it. So that was a lot of fun to work with them on that. And then I worked with one of our photographers in house to do the photo shoot where we recreated the T-Rex breaking out of its pen in the night. I got to stand there and hold the fog can and splash water on the things while we were taking the shots to make it look like it was raining and wet. It was a lot of fun. So that was kind of one of my big first like projects that I did entirely. And then also Victory Saber kind of got dropped into my lap, and I didn't know much about the Victory universe before like coming back to the brand. So I did a lot of brushing up and watching a lot of subtitled episodes and trying to figure out how we were going to make that. So, you know, getting that launch video put together from the renders and trying to make sure it was really going to hit with the fans. And then, you know, clearly we went and had the audio re-recorded so that people were like, oh, this is legit. Like, this is great. So, those are probably the first two like major projects that I worked on that anybody saw impact of like what I did from the marketing side of things.
Awesome. All right. So our last question for the Q&A here comes from some guy, you know, definitely not anyone important or that anyone knows in the Transformers world. Definitely not a former guest on the show. At Mark Clonus asks, do you think Sea Spray will ever be made?
Yeah, he's definitely like one of the not important people in our community by any means. So, yeah, I don't know. Always asking when things will get made. Clearly, I am not shy about Sea Spray. This dude has been in the line plan. Every time we make a line plan, we look at exclusive programs. I try to figure out where to fit Sea Spray into the line wherever I can. Full transparency, we're talking about 2025 now. We're doing our planning, and he's in wave one trying to figure out how to keep him. I guarantee, just because it's my luck, he'll probably not make the cut. So don't keep your hopes up if you're a giant Sea Spray fan. I'll fight for him till the death, but he's just one of those characters that, like, he's very unique and hard to partial or reuse efficiently, like we talked about earlier. I'm a Decepticon forever, always will be. Soundwave, absolutely love him. Think he's actually like the secret best leader of the Decepticons, and eventually at some point in time he's going to win out and he'll just take out Shockwave and Megatron and Starscream and just be like, yeah, I got you all. You had no idea I was coming. But Sea Spray was my first mini-bot as a kid, so that's where my love for him comes. He still sits in my office up on my desk and looks over me all the time while I'm working, so it's just fun. One of those characters that, you know, gets an occasional remake. Here and there, like he got a Power of the Primes in that trilogy somewhere, redo, and that was awesome. And then Marcelo recently was showing some artwork he had done for that packaging, and I was like, I need more Sea Spray in my life. And now I think he's bringing me those original drawings to Comic-Con for me to get off him so I can frame them and put in my office. So he's just one of those characters that I love as much as I, you know, love the rest of my Decepticons, because peace through tyranny. Clearly.
Listen, all you got to do is get him to show up in one of the movies. And then.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's funny. You know, everybody's always like, more boats. And I'm like, they're called Autobots. Like, just saying.
Yeah, no, but, you know, of course, that question comes from Transformers designer Mark Maha. Mark, welcome back on the show at any time, buddy. Thanks for busting chops.
Mark's great. We have a team design chat, and we just talk all day, every day about stuff like, hey, will this work? Or like today, Mark was trying to figure out redeco and partial thing that's happening for an exclusive next year. And he just kept dropping pictures and he's like, ignore this. I just need a picture and I need to reference it on Teams when I get home. Ignore. And like, I just have like 40 pictures from him today in the office, like trying to figure out stuff to compile back to send it to Carr and be like, look, this is how this will work. I took pictures and like puts it together. So yeah, it's great to work with both of them. And then our team at Takara, they, again, we say wizards all the time and we mean it. Like, they are absolute legend designers and it's great to be partnered with them. And we couldn't do it without that partnership by any means. Like, they really are a big part of what we do, which is why we try to be conscious of like giving them credit when we reveal the toys and do the posts online to be like, yeah, you know, we worked on this with Hisui-san or we worked with this with Yuki-san, and just making sure that they get as much credit as we do. Like, we're the face, but they do as much work as we do.
It was great to see Hisui-san on not this last stream, but the one before that, you know, seeing him actually there with the model. Like, I thought that was a really nice touch, by the way, you know, so yeah. Shouts it's to always, the Takara team.
Yeah. It's always fun to get them involved as best as we can. You know, there's clearly a language barrier, but their team is great about it and they are very willing to do those videos and then send us a nice translation document and we're able to put it together and hopefully it comes out in the way that it should make sense. I'm sure we miss like a line here or there somewhere along the way, but our fans on this side aren't, you know, fluent in Japanese, or at least most of them aren't. So we definitely are trying to make sure that they get the credit they deserve too. But yeah, Hisui had worked on that previous model of the Armada Optimus that got out there a few years ago. So we were like, yeah, we need to make sure like you get to talk about this and then talk about how it plays in scale with the Armada Megatron that's coming with it. And just like, you know, so it's a lot of fun to use them where we can.
Very, very cool. Well, with that, that takes us out of our Q&A section. BMAC,
we did it.
You survived fan Q&A.
I did it.
And then before we let you go, though, we do have a final question that we ask all of our guests. Dave, would you like to fulfill your role as this podcast's James Lipton and ask our final question?
Why, yes, I would. BMAC, the final question that we ask all of our guests. What is your favorite and or strangest piece in your collection? It can be one of each, or it can be both.
Interesting. It's a good question. Probably my funniest, I don't know if it's strangest, but funniest, is I have a Conan the Barbarian toy from the old cartoon that was like this battle axe chopping motion Conan toy that has a string and you pull in his back. The battle axe is long gone, and you know, being a guy and being stupid, you can turn his hand in a very inappropriate way now and pull the string and make him do funny things. That toy is always a talking piece when people see it. My brother-in-law happened to be over and was helping out. He's in my basement. And, he saw the thing and he just picks it up and pulls the string and he's just like, oh, okay, what's going on? And my wife just like, I'm sorry, my husband's, you know, ridiculous and this is his toy and this is what happened. So I don't know what's strangest, but again, funniest or unique, just old toy to have. Yeah, I don't know if anything like super unique per se. I'm trying to think. There's so much stuff now that I just like.
Can't well, I mean, remember. You dropped a couple of gems in the beginning. Those
true. Those prototypes. Things are awesome. Someday I plan to get them all out and display them in my office. You know, maybe until we have another kid and then I have to pack up and get out of my office and go sit in some corner of the house. But yeah, I don't know. That one's my like fun, interesting, good talking piece that people don't expect to happen. In terms of those old Joes, like probably just like getting to test the X-19 jet before it ever came out. That was like just really cool. You're just like this giant jet. Like we lived in the glory age of toys and play sets and stuff. That one's probably fun. I know people really, it's like a grail for some people that they missed along the way. So I really like having that. I have an old Batman, the animated series Batmobile still from the original run of that show. That's a lot of fun. I really enjoy that. It has the hubcaps pull out so they can like grind on the other vehicles. That's a good fun one to have in the old collection too. And then I have a lot of the old Toy Biz Marvel stuff. Professor X, the Wolverine with the claws, you push the button, they spring load pop out, some Cable, Gambit with his bad PVC coat that just looked awful, but you're like, I have a Gambit figure. I don't care how bad this looks. So,
yeah.
A lot of fun old stuff.
The plastic decisions of the early 90s.
Yeah.
But the artwork on the cards was on point, right?
Like yep.
That, mm-hmm. The X-Men trading cards, I know Ryan's a huge fan of that, but like being able to have Jim Lee art on a trading card just doesn't seem like it's something that you should have been able to ever buy because he's such an amazing and wonderful artist. Actually found out that he did two covers for the Transformer Marvel books throughout the time when he was at Marvel. So that was interesting to read. I'm like, that means we should get Jim Lee to do something with us somewhere along the way for the 40th anniversary. Like, let's get Jim on something. Yeah.
So is Jim in budget?
Yeah.
Well, Jim, didn't he just get promoted to like,
yeah, he's like
head
all
of
in
DC.
Charge.
Yeah. They gave him the big promotion.
The big one.
Well, BMAC, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show. This was awesome. Before we say good evening, remind our listeners, where can they find you on Instagram? Where can they find out the latest about Transformers? Drop all the ats and the mentions and everything. Where can they find all the good
alrighty.
Stuff?
At Transformers, our official handle on Instagram, that's where all you'll see the pre-order posts go up, anything about the movie that we're resharing with Paramount, you'll find it there. At Hasbro Pulse, also another good one to follow as we work hand in hand with Pulse. They're kind of like a marketing extension of Hasbro and action brands in general. You can find me on Instagram at bmacatron84 because sadly bmacatron was taken. I throw that 84 in there. Zero is born, you're the brand started, so it works. As we alluded to, you can find Mark at Mark Clonus. And then I'm always going to butcher Evan's username. It's his name backwards, so it's like Evan, so it's Nave.
It's like Nave Scorb?
Scorb, because his last name is Brooks. So like his name just backwards is his username. And then Sam is at King Sam Locke. So, who crushes all the rest of us and how he does his Instagram posts, and you're just like, oh, it's so beautiful and perfect. And he goes into KeyShot and he just makes these perfect 360 turns and CAD half videos, and you're like, uh-huh. I'm like, here's the graphic from Hasbro Pulse that says I'm going to do a fan stream next week. Like, I have the least creative because I can only talk about things after they're public. The other guys actually get to do some like behind the scenes stuff. So yeah, that's where you can find us. If you want to follow Lenny, at Weather Dominator is his G.I. Joe handle. Because clearly the Weather Dominating Machine was an awesome part of A Real American Hero. So
yeah, I like that he like started to commit to his Instagram account being like in the voice of Cobra Commander and has slowly just turned yeah. back into just being Lenny.
It's perfect.
All right. Well, BMAC, thank you. We'll make sure we'll put all those links, in the show notes. That way people can go and click and follow and leave the comments for all of the headmasters and all of the random bots that they want. And they can pepper you with those requests.
Perfect. I expect my inbox to blow up of like, why haven't you made this character since 1988 Wave 2? It hit shelves on March and I want a new one. Like, I'm ready for it. Send it.
Full send. Dave, why don't you send us home?
Go see Rise of the Beasts on June 9th and check out all the new toys.
Till all are one. Thank you, dear listener, for hanging out with us today. Subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen, and then tell your friends to do it. Thanks also to Joe Azari, the golden voice behind our intro. Our music is Game Boy Horror by the Zombie Dandies. Find more about them both in our show notes.
Follow us on social media at AIC_podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Stop by and say hi, show us your toy hauls, and share your toy stories. Maybe we'll talk about it in a future episode.
Don't try this at home. Void where prohibited and some assembly required. Each sold separately, not a flying toy. Consult a physician if your toy run exceeds more than 4 hours.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.